Hello and welcome to the Deep End. I am Ahmed, and joining me is my good friend and sports prodigy Mo.
What's up, bro? How you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I'm just glad my power's back, honestly.
we ran into a little technical issue before
we started recording this. My power went out, and in my area, usually when my power goes out, it goes out for quite a bit, and I had honestly almost lost hope that we were going to record tonight, but you know, here we are. I'm just glad we got through it.
Yeah, man, we're fighting through whatever, and we're going to give the listeners a good show today. The fixtures are coming hot and heavy, and a lot of teams are kind of making their push for the top here and in all leagues, really. So let's start like we usually do with the Premier League. I'll get us going here with Chelsea and Tottenham, the London Derby. Obviously, a lot of eyes on this game. Chelsea got off to a pretty decent start. I think Tottenham didn't really have a lot of opportunities like as much as they would want. I mean, Son was coming back from injury. I know he was hurt, but he didn't really see too much of him that game. He had a couple decent through passes. Harry Kane wasn't that much of a factor in the first half. The first half finished 0-0. Both teams didn't have that many chances really in the first half. They were kind of feeling each other out. But Thiago Silva started the scoring in the 49th minute with a header from a very nice cross. And it was really poor man marking at Chelsea. I think Eric Dier was the one responsible for having Thiago Silva marked on that set piece. And he kind of like left him alone. He wasn't really there. So that was an easy header for him, and Thiago Silva is known for scoring headers, but I don't think he scored yet this season. And then in the 57th minute, N'Golo Kante, of all people, he doesn't score many goals. He makes a lot of them. He just doesn't really score a lot of them, but he scored in the 57th minute off a deflection, albeit, but they gave the goal to him. And then Antonio Rudiger finished off the scoring in the 92nd minute. So it was goals are pretty much scored, I'm sorry, by all defenders this game, essentially, except for Kante, who's a midfielder. But this game was what it was. It was a London derby, but not, there was pretty much one team in it. Hugo Lloris did have a couple good saves at the end. I think Chelsea could have made it, you know, the deficit a lot more. They could have scored a lot more goals, but Lloris had some decent saves at the end. There was a sequence where it was kind of, things did get a little hairy for Tottenham, but he kept out a couple of nice shots. And just a quick lineup, going over the lineups here for this game. I think Chelsea's defense, I just wanted to say this, I think Chelsea's defense is very, very underrated. They played a 3-4-2-1 today. I think that's usually what they go to. So Marcos Alonso and Azpilicueta on the wings, they kind of drop back, and they're also more freedom to attack. So I feel like that really kind of throws team off, because Marcos Alonso, he's a very good attacker. When he makes those forward runs, he gets players involved, and he has a lot of shots on goal himself. So I think that's actually really good for Chelsea. I think that's, they kind of have a good formula there for sure. And I think this, their defense is Tony Rudiger, good defender. He has very positioning. I noticed on a lot of the crosses that Tottenham were very good positioning. He kept out a couple of Silva. We all know how good he is. So very, very, he's really good. All in all, this is a good win. See this. Takes them like that. They're in a tie, actually, with Man United, who we'll get into later. But other than that, just a couple quick stats here. Stuff I found was kind of cool. So Chelsea have won their last six away London derbies, and it's their longest streak in Premier League history. And on the other side of the coin, Tottenham have lost consecutive Premier League games without scoring a single goal for the first time since February 2021, which also came at the hands of Chelsea, believe it or not. So that's pretty much that for this game, unless you wanted to add something in.
Just a little couple of things. I mean, from the analysis standpoint, you covered every major point. A couple of things. Tottenham is they're in a rut. I feel like they're heading into a rut, kind of. You know, Son obviously coming back from injury, he's not going to be doing that well. He's going to come into form over the next few games. It's Harry Kane that's mostly the issue at the moment. I'm not sure if his confidence is shaken. I'm not sure if he's just given up on the team, but you know, this is not the premier striker that Man City was basically throwing themselves out for. This is not the guy who was supposed to be the future of England. You know what I mean? He's always been one of those dangerous strikers, but you know, this we're 5 games in, and I believe this is his 4th game. And he's not doing that well. I don't see the danger. I do not see the guy that I'm used to seeing with Tottenham, the guy that's, you know, almost always in that golden boot conversation. Just, I don't see him this year.
Yeah, no, you're right, man. He's a far cry from what he was last year, for sure, where he was, I think he had the most goals and assists in the Premier League.
He did, like that. I think that made him the 3rd time in Premier League history where a player both finished in the highest, with the highest assist and the highest goals. And that's just something, even if there are more than 3 players, that just, you know, that's a great accomplishment, because the Premier League is full of talent. The Premier League is full of players who can always, you know, always go get their own on a good day. And for him to dominate both categories like that is something very special to see. But again, that was last year, and the Harry Kane of this year is definitely not the Harry Kane of last year.
Oh yeah, for sure, man.
And when it comes to Chelsea, again, they just keep dominating. You know, not a lot of help from the attack this you know, round or this game week. But Thiago Silva always coming in clutch. He's a fantastic defender. It kind of feels like he only gets better with age. It's crazy to think about how long he's been actually playing the game and how many miles he has on his body. From, you know, his time with PSG, all the times that he suited up for international duty with Brazil, he's just a really, really good player. Obviously, same with N'Golo Kante. You know, you always talk about how N'Golo Kante puts it all on the pitch, and he doesn't really pay attention to stats as much. He just, you know, kind of focused on the hustle and the grind of, you know, pulling out a win. But it was really, really good to see, you know, that every once in a while, his efforts get rewarded with a goal or an assist or something like that. So that was great to talk about, or that was great to, like, at least see from Chelsea this week. The fact that they don't need to rely on their, you know, their primary strikers or, like, their fantastic midfield to really get them the wins. You know, Rudiger, obviously, Thiago Silva, both of them being center backs, and N'Golo Kante being a holding midfielder, seeing all, you know, players who don't score as often score that game and pull out a win against Tottenham. Really, really good to see. Just, you know, further cements Chelsea's place as Premier League title contenders.
Yeah, man, definitely. I think we got everything for that game, at least.
All right, I'm going to segue over into Brentford and Wolves. I thought this was a really, really interesting game because Wolves, they are better than what their record says it is. I feel like every game for them, and we've talked about this before, every game for them is just literally a matter of, you know, being more accurate with their shots. You know, they always have these near misses. They always have these, you know, games where it feels like they're dominating on the pitch and they always like look very dangerous. But at the same time, they just never have enough to really pull out a victory. Unfortunately, that was the case this week as well because they lost to Premier League newcomers Brentford. They've been doing fantastic since they've stepped in the Premier League. I believe that they've only had 1 defeat so far. And the rest of them were either obviously ties or draws and wins. And Brentford pulled out a win this week. Pretty much a large part of that was their premier striker, Ivan Toney. Ivan Toney obviously coming in from the Championship from last season with 33 goals and 9 assists. Really, really impressive stat line. And this game he contributed both. He scored a penalty and he assisted later in the game. With the penalty, it was off a corner. The Wolves defender, Marcel, he was, you know, he kind of had Toney locked up, and it was fantastic defense, but apparently the referee thought it was too aggressive or too much physicality, so he actually called for a penalty, you know, before the corner was even taken. It was reviewed, obviously, with VAR, but, you know, they just kept going through, and Tony ended up scoring a penalty. When it comes to Wolves, you know, Adama Traore, still not understanding why he has such a ridiculous dip in form. He showed itself again this week, Adama Traore. He's fantastic at dribbling. He's fantastic at getting into the box. But for some reason, once he gets into the box, he just forgets all fundamentals of soccer or fundamentals of football. And that was the case this week. You know, he had a play where he was just running down the pitch. He was running down the left wing, you know, kind of segued over into the middle. You know, gave a defender a little shimmy. You know, he kind of got past the defender. He's very good at doing that because of obviously his speed and his physicality. And he shot, literally, I believe he was on the edge of the box, deflected off of a Brentford defender, and literally just hit the top post and bounced back. Really, really close, and would have been a great goal. Really, really would have. But again, things are just not working out for Wolves. And things ended up getting worse when Tony ended up assisting to Mbeumo a couple minutes later to make it 2-0 for Brentford. The other only very close chance that I saw myself during that game was, again, due to Adama Traore, this time running down the right wing. You know, it kind of looked like he dribbled it way too far. It looked like he was literally about to just fall out of bounds. But for, like, somehow he ended up getting the ball, like, as, like, it was on the line before it touched out of bounds. Gave a fantastic cross to Jimenez, and Jimenez, honestly, just missed a sitter. Again, I understand he's coming back to form off because of that ridiculous head injury that he had. And I know that he's never going to be the same again because he's always going to play a little bit more conservative. But, you know, it was a really easy, really, really easy shot. Just a very plain sitter off of his head that just, you know, it could have really helped Wolves. Maybe it could have, you know, led to a tie even. But, again, he missed. Wolves ended up losing 2-0. Just a disastrous season for them so far. They're really, really missing Nuno. I'm not sure if they're just missing their old coach or they're missing all the Portuguese players that were on that team. Yeah, tough season for Wolves. You know, it's crazy to see because you always hope that a club such as Wolves, like, do good. I remember when Wolves came back into the Premier League, I believe it was in 2018. Everyone really expected them to just, like, hang around for a year and go back into the Championship, but I do remember them finishing, I believe it was top 6 or top 8. And Wolves, they were a force to be reckoned with. They were newcomers to the Premier League, but every single game was very tough for them, or very, very tough for their opponents. The defense was just on point almost every game. They had a lot of great players up top. Adama Traore was defending. He was doing everything on the pitch, to, you know, defending, passing, crossing, shooting, all these things. He genuinely looked like one of the most dangerous players in the world during that 2018 season. But ever since then, he's been, you know, very subpar. So it's kind of disappointing to see. As for Brentford, you know, they just keep rolling on. They're just making their case on why they should stay in the Premier League. And it's great to see because this is a team that has a really, really good story. It makes you feel good about, like, the beautiful game, I guess. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's right. And what you said about Wolves is pretty disappointing. I agree how they've been playing and they haven't had really anything to show for it. Because I know they have some good talent, and I have Adama Traore, former Barca boy. I like him a lot, but it's just unfortunate. You got to finish those chances when you play at a high level like that, especially in the Premier League, even against teams like Brentford, even though they are newly promoted. Doesn't matter. I mean, you still got to finish chances against whoever you play, so just got to finish your breakfast there for Wolves. That's their story. And then we can let's segue into Arsenal against Burnley. Arsenal, what I like about them this game is that I think Arteta is either coming to his senses or he's starting to feel the heat now. I mean, his long leash might be getting a little shorter. So what he did this game and the last game against Norwich, he kept pretty much the same lineups, which I like. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You just won a game with that same lineup. You might as well keep it. So I feel like it was a good lineup, and I like how they started Aaron Ramsdale again in goal. I'll get to it later, but he did kind of help him a lot at the end. The game could have ended in a tie, but he really saved them. Arsenal looked really threatening to start off the game. They had a lot of chances they were creating. Kieran Tierney from that left-hand side was very dangerous and threatening. He made a lot of forward runs. Saka was decent. He didn't have his best game. He was okay. Pepe was good. I was shocked at Aubameyang. He didn't really have like a chance. I mean, I guess they were defending him pretty well, but he didn't really even have one chance. And he's usually, you know, that target man, that danger man that they have. But yeah, so just a 1-0 victory, but that free kick from Martin Odegaard was something pretty special. I mean, it was a very, very nice free kick. Right over the wall to the goalkeeper's right hand side, could do nothing about it. So Arsenal do squeeze out of there with another win. There was some controversy at the end though, which is what I was saying with Aaron Ramsdale on a terrible back pass. I don't know what Ben White was thinking. He passed it back to Aaron Ramsdale, and the attacker for Burnley, I don't remember exactly who it was, but it looked like Aaron Ramsdale kind of fouled him in the penalty box, so there was a VAR review penalty, but VAR said it wasn't, so that's all that really matters. And that's about it, because he initially awarded a penalty actually, and then VAR said, you know, no. But and so that's about it for that game. The only thing that really stood out for me was how ineffective the attack was for Arsenal. I think Aubameyang and Pepe need more chances. They need to be more creative, because they're kind of all Arsenal really has. I mean, Arsenal has some decent talent on their team, but when you look at like star power, it's probably Aubameyang and Pepe. Maybe Martin Odegaard is a budding star, but he's very good. So but yeah, so the highlight for me for this game was Aaron Ramsdale. He had some good saves. Martin Odegaard had some good plays. He obviously had that free kick goal. And Burnley is actually winless in their last 13 Premier League home games, which is kind of tough. And they're also winless in their last 10 home games against Arsenal specifically. So that's kind of a bad stat for them. They don't really win much at home, so that's not good for them or their fans really. Arsenal have won consecutive league games by a 1-0 scoreline for the first time since 2014. And 11 players and 11 different players had a shot today for Burnley, but you know, they never had a goal, obviously. So that just goes to show that 11 different players shot today, but nothing to show for it. So good job to Aaron Ramsdale, and that back line for Arsenal really stood its ground. So overall, a better performance from Arsenal for sure.
No, yeah, for sure. Like you mentioned, Arteta is basically, I feel like maybe, I'm not sure if I would agree with the fact that maybe his leash is getting shorter. I mean, obviously he's feeling the pressure coming from management because they're expecting him to get results. But I feel like this is just mostly a case of he tried a lineup and it worked, and he tried it again this game, and I feel like, you know, this is working going forward. He has a lot of tactics going forward. And yeah, he has a lot of tactics going forward. He has a lot of players that he can rely on. And Burnley, you know, just being mostly a disappointing team, not even just this season, mostly every season. Again, it's just kind of miraculous to see how Burnley hasn't been relegated yet. They don't have a lot of great attackers, not a lot of great defenders. They have tough defenders, very physical defenders, one of the more physical teams in the league. But again, you know, nothing special, nothing to get them to contend, nothing to even get them in the Europa League or maybe the Champions League qualifications. But for some reason, you always find them not getting relegated, not even being close to getting relegated. So they just do literally the bare minimum to stay in the Premier League. And I guess that's okay, but that's not exactly what you should be aiming for. As for Arsenal, you know, the memes were fun. You know, everyone was talking about how they might get relegated. Obviously, I don't think that's going to happen now, especially with them, you know, trying to refine their form or recover their form. And it feels like it's starting to work just a little bit. But that's basically it for that game. Heading over into the next game, it was Liverpool and Palace. Liverpool, obviously, trying to get back into form. And coming off of a fantastic win against AC Milan, they took care of Palace pretty easily. It wasn't easy exactly, but it was pretty, like, scoreline-wise, it looked like, you know, they just outclassed Crystal Palace. They decided to start Mane this game after he was benched during the AC Milan game in the Champions League. And maybe a part of that had to do with rest, and maybe a part of it had to do with how his form was beyond questionable in the last game. But, you know, he found himself back in the starting 11 this week. And, you know, the game looked pretty simple so far. First couple minutes, you had a very, very, like, clear shot on goal from Diego Jota. Just literally just a perfect pass coming in for him. And he was really just one-on-one with the goalkeeper. And he just, I don't know, he blasted it upwards. I have no idea what he was thinking there, but maybe it was nerves, maybe it was something else, but he just, it was a pass that led to a very questionable shot. I am not sure what happened there. A couple minutes later, a corner coming in from Costa Simicas. Mane just found the ball, tapped it in, and scored. He opened the scoring for Liverpool, adding one more to his goal total. And this would make his 100th goal with Liverpool, which is fantastic to see, honestly. I know that we were talking about, you know, how bad he was doing last week. And, you know, maybe it was a one-off. Maybe he was coming back into form. I'm not sure what it is exactly. But again, you know, he scored last week and he scored this week as well. And I believe this is, what, this is 1 week or 2 weeks after Salah scored his 100th goal himself. So that's nice to see, you know, both very elite wingers coming in for Liverpool. Second goal was also off a corner. Again, Simicas just, you know, giving a very straight through corner to Van Dijk. Instead of hitting it off of his head, it just bounced off the back of his shoulder onto Salah. Salah just, you know, he just knows what to do with the ball. It was just him and the goalkeeper. And easy score for Mo Salah. It was very evident to see that he was very happy with the goal. You know, just took off his shirt, started celebrating. It's always nice to see. It wasn't great for me, considering I had him in my fantasy team. And he obviously got booked because that's an automatic yellow card. And that's just a point that I needed. But, you know, I'm not going to complain too much. Third goal, I think this was my favorite goal of the game. Came off of a Naby Keita volley. He was literally at the edge of the box, and it kind of felt like it came out of nowhere. It kind of felt like even when Keita was celebrating, he didn't even know what was going on. He was looking around. He's like, what? You know, like, was that me? You know, obviously his teammates were very happy for him, but it was a fantastic goal. It's not something that you see from the player every day. But again, this is the beautiful thing about Liverpool's system. I know that we complain about their transfer strategy, but seeing their fringe players, seeing the players that don't get a lot of minutes in the rotation, you know, overperforming, is always nice to see. It kind of gives you like a sense of relief knowing that Liverpool can, you know, keep contending even though they don't make the superstar signings or making the big splash signings, you know, compared to the other clubs around them. Palace, you know, struggling. You know, it kind of feels like one game they're on top of the world, you know, when they beat Tottenham last week. And it feels like, you know, another game, they're just literally on the bottom. You don't really know. This team is still forming an identity. They're still, you know, changing their tactics around under their new coach. You don't really know, like, who's going to be the star of the show or star of the game that, you know, that specific match day. Wilfried Zaha is obviously the leader of that team. But after that, you know, you don't really know who's their number two option, their number three option. last week we saw that Edouard, the guy they debuted and scored 2 goals in, I think, what, it was under 10 minutes. I believe it was 6 minutes to be specific. Very, very nice to see. But again, this week kind of disappeared. A very consistent player that I found in Palace's midfield is Gallagher. Yeah, he's very, very good. He's a very good playmaker. Very slow off the ball, though. You know, he definitely has his bad points, his weak points. But, you know, he's proving to be a consistent player for Palace, and that's something that's desperately needed for a team that's still trying to find their identity under this new coach.
Yeah, I mean, you covered everything, man, but the Naby Keita goal was a hell of a goal, and he hit him with that D-Rose celebration after Derkos hit that game winner against the Cavs in the playoffs. He just kind of stone-faced and just mean-mugging, and I liked it, man. It was nice. It was nice to see that from a player like him. He was so nonchalant about it. It was awesome. And Gallagher, it's funny you say that about Gallagher. He's actually a Chelsea youth product, and he's on loan from Chelsea to Palace. And the Chelsea fans were very, very upset that he's gone on loan. But, I mean, he's a really good player. He might be a little slow off the ball. He's still young. He's 21 years old, so he'll grow into it. But all the Chelsea fans are super, super high on this kid. So I think once he gets back to Chelsea, we might see their midfield get even stronger than it already is, which is just nuts to even think about. So that's good for that game. And then let's transition into another London team traveling to Manchester. Actually, Manchester traveled to London Stadium, I'm sorry, to take on West Ham. And the bubbles were flying, of course, before this game. And we got Saeed Benrahma opened up the scoring, the Algerian phenom. He's been on one this season, that's for sure. He's been scoring, he's been assisting. Kind of came out of nowhere for some people. People that don't really follow West Ham probably wouldn't even know this guy. But he's definitely coming onto the scene right now. And he's well-deserved, so good for him. He's been making all the right plays. He's been having good shots on goal. And this game was just crazy to start with because it seemed like in the beginning, Man United had a lot of chances, and Lucas Fabianski, the West Ham goalkeeper, God bless this guy, man. He was under a lot of pressure to start the game. That West Ham defense couldn't really do much against the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo, Pogba, Fernandez, all those guys. But he finally cracked, you know, death, taxes, and Cristiano Ronaldo scoring a tap-in, which happened again this game. And it was off a save, actually. It was a nice ball, though. Bruno Fernandes played him in, like, literally he was onside by, like a finger's length. Like, it was really great how he played him in. And then Fabianski saved the first one, and Ronaldo tapped it in. So 1-1 at the half. And then going into the second half, it was pretty back and forth, I would say. Both teams had chances. Bowen had chances. Suchek, Fornals, they had a couple chances in the game. Ronaldo even had a couple chances. He had a chance where I thought he was going to score. He made a run down the left-hand side, and he got it. And someone made a really nice tackle. I think it was either Kurt Zouma or Ogbonna. Someone in the center backs made a really good tackle on him, and they kind of took away. Ronaldo was trying to go from his left to his right, and the defender took it away, whoever it was, one of those guys. And then pretty much bring on Jesse Lingard, Jesse Messi, Lionel Lingard, whatever people are calling him these days. Scored a fantastic goal. It was an amazing goal, man. He hit at upper 90. I mean, you couldn't put two goalkeepers there. I mean, you can't do anything about it. But that was a great goal. He obviously didn't celebrate because it was against his former team. And then just when you thought, you know, this game couldn't get any crazier and that's it, you know, Lingard toward the 89th minute, mind you. So, and after that, in like, I want to say what, like the 93rd or 92nd minute, Man United give up a penalty, so everyone's on their feet. You know, people are screaming and yelling and shouting, and this game's just crazy. But Mark Noble is the guy that shot the penalty, right? And this guy entered the game from the bench to take the penalty, and stab me if you've heard this before, but Euro final, we saw this before.
Yeah, Sancho and Marcus Rashford.
Saka. Yeah, well, Saka missed the penalty. No. Yeah,
I don't know. Saka missed the penalty, but I'm talking about, I remember it was in the final of the penalty shootout. Like, it was near the end of the game where they subbed in Sancho and Rashford, and both of those guys missed the penalties in the penalty shootout, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and then this guy, you know, same thing happened with him. I don't know what it was, but it didn't look like a good penalty. David De Gea made a good save, don't get me wrong. And he made a few good saves this game, actually. But I don't know about that. I just don't think that should be a thing. I think the person to shoot the penalty should be someone that's been in the game, that has had those runs in the game, who's warm enough, who's comfortable enough to shoot it. You have these people coming off the bench and shooting penalties. They might not even be comfortable yet in the game. Like, they still have to get their passes in. They have to get a few touches on the ball to get comfortable, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I think that cost him. I think that cost him a few points, man. Because if I'm being honest, I think someone else should have shot it. You got people like Declan Rice that were still in the game, Aaron Cresswell maybe. I don't know if they had Pablo Fornals maybe. Anyone? I don't know. I think that was kind of a mistake by them. But nonetheless, West Ham loses that game, and Man United, like I said earlier, are tied for first with Chelsea now. And Manchester United are unbeaten in their last 14 away games in the Premier League when conceding first, which is a pretty crazy stat, and including a 3-1 victory in fixtures this season. So they're pretty much comeback kings, if that's what you want to call them, and kind of like another team in Spain who we'll get to later. And West Ham manager David Moyes has only won 3 of his 29 games against Man United in the Premier League. So this guy's faced Man United a lot and has not had any success. That's keeping it pretty pretty mildly. And Man United have been really good on the road, and that's something that they've been like good at for a while. So this is the 29th game away from home without a defeat. So that just keeps proving that these guys have really, really know how to play against hostile crowds, and they don't really fear that stuff or get intimidated. So good game overall. Man United though, coming away with a beautiful goal from Lingard.
You pretty much got everything. You said it all during that thing. I thought seeing Lingard score contribute mostly was really nice to see, because obviously everyone knows that Lingard had a very, very good spell with West Ham last year during his loan, and I believe that he wants to go back, because obviously there's just a surplus of midfielders at Man United at the moment. So it was nice to show that Lingard is like out there saying, I'm contributing, I'm here, come and get me. And I feel like maybe there's a deal in the works, maybe during the January transfer window. I really hope so, because Lingard, as much as everyone makes him out to be a meme or everyone makes fun of him or anything like that, I feel like he's a very solid player in the correct system. And that correct system is currently not Manchester United. I know that he's contributing. I know that he scored, but it doesn't happen that often. It does not happen that often, because you always see him on the bench. He's not always picked. And when he does play, he's just in the shadow of so many great players next to him, on that Manchester United squad. And when it comes to the penalty that Mark Noble missed, I do understand why they brought on Mark Noble. He's basically the talisman of that club. He's just, Mr. Reliable. He's always there. But I definitely agree with your point about the player that should be shooting a penalty, especially during the final minutes of a game, should be someone that felt all the nerves before the game, someone in the, they just went through the motions of the entire game, the full 90 minutes, someone that knows the situation. Someone watching on the sidelines and, kind of advising his teammates is kind of different from someone that's been on that pitch and, talked and communicated and, fought for the ball. So I do not exactly blame them for bringing on Mark Noble, but I am blaming him for the fact they did not bring a specific player that played. And you have options. Like you said, you have Cresswell. I know he's a defender, but he's fantastic. He's a really, really good, player all around for them, just not for defending. You have Benrahma, who literally scored the goal for West Ham. You know, he shoots. He's a good midfielder. Obviously, Antonio, if he was playing this game, he would have shot it clearly. But, you know, obviously because of his red card from last week, he couldn't play this week. But, you know, it's just disappointing for David Moyes. David Moyes, obviously, as everyone knows, he coached Manchester United, you know, a couple years back. It was, I believe he was the first... Was he? I'm pretty sure he was the first manager to coach Manchester United after Sir Alex retired. I'm pretty sure it's going to be either him or Louis van Gaal. I'm not exactly sure. It's one of those two. But Moyes' spell at Manchester United was awful. He won nothing. The only thing he ended up winning was during his first actual game. He won the Community Shield in 2013. You know, no Premier League titles, no Champions League titles, nothing else after that. Just that Community Shield. That's his only accomplishment with Manchester United. I believe he got let go. I believe it was like a year or 18 months later. So I know that Manchester United is not his favorite place to play or play against. Obviously, due to all the abuse that he received from the fans after, you know, not performing as well as Sir Alex did. And I feel like it was kind of unfair because, you know, Sir Alex is... in my eyes, the greatest manager of all time. I do not believe that anyone is going to be greater than that guy right there. And for them to put all that weight on David Moyes' shoulders so many years ago was kind of unfair, even looking back at it now. But yeah. You know, heading over to a different game, you know, United's rivals over at Manchester City, they played Southampton this week. And, geez. Snooze fest, honestly. It finished off a 0-0 draw. The only exciting thing, you know, quote unquote, during this game was near the beginning of the game where it kind of looked like a Kyle Walker defended against Adam Armstrong in the box, and it kind of looked like he knocked him down, you know, in the box, which would technically make Manchester City concede a penalty, and the referee, Jonathan Moss, I believe, he actually called for a penalty. But, you know, after a VAR review, it kind of looked like, and it was kind of iffy, kind of felt like Kyle Walker kind of just collapsed into Adam Armstrong. No intentional hit there, not even a bad hit when you're looking at the replay. And, you know, Kyle Walker should be very grateful towards the referee, especially the guy that called for the VAR review, because he actually got a red card. It wasn't a straight red. I believe it was a second yellow if that penalty had gone through. But it was canceled. It was called off due to VAR. So, again, not that great. Other, you know, chances during the game. You saw Ilkay Gundogan. He had a lot of really, really good chances during this game, but he just could not capitalize. He was just not the guy that game. You know, Gundogan, I believe he was maybe thrust into the spotlight a little bit because I felt like he was playing more of an attacking role. Because obviously, as we all know, Manchester City are basically playing without a true nine this year. And I feel like Pep is just like pushing players into that role and seeing what works. So far, you know, a couple games, it looked like Torres was the guy going forward at striker, but after a couple bad games, it kind of felt like he wanted to try someone new. I know that Gabriel Jesus was in that game as well, but, you know, again, I do not see him as the premier striker going forward. I feel like he's just not that great of a player. I don't feel like he's consistent enough to be the starter going forward. After that, you know, a lot of really good chances after that. It kind of felt like the Phil Foden chance was fantastic. It was basically off a fantastic cross. Foden, you know, kind of felt like he wanted to just roll it into the bottom left corner, but it was saved by James McCarthy. And Sterling, I believe, yes, it was Sterling right after that. He was offside, unfortunately, but he tapped it in, you know, obviously started celebrating before it was really revealed that he was offside. And, you know, other than that, you know, not a lot of chances for City. They just couldn't capitalize on the chances that they had. The only positive point that I could probably take out from this game is that it looks like KDB is getting back into form. After De Bruyne, obviously, he was injured for a pretty long time. It kind of feels like, you know, he's easing back into his role with City, and a very, very good game for him this week. I felt like his crosses were fantastic. His passing was very, very on point. Obviously not enough for them to pull out a win or for him to assist on a goal or anything like that. But it kind of it's good to see that he's getting back into his form because, you know, on a good day, De Bruyne is literally one of the best midfielders in the world, if not the best. You know, he's the complete package that you want in a midfielder. He can pass fantastic. He can shoot absolute rockets. His crossing is very good. His defending is very good if he ever needs to come back on defense. So it's really, really nice to, for me to see him, you know, coming back into form, you know, slowly but surely.
Yeah, he's definitely, in my opinion, at least on his day, like you said, on a very good day for him. I think he is the best midfielder in the world. Just his vision, his passing, his shooting as well. I mean, this guy has everything, really. And I don't know, this game for me, it was very, very boring. I didn't really find anything that I liked in this game. It's just the fact that, you know, both teams just couldn't pull out a goal. Man City definitely had the easier, or I say the better chances at least. And I don't know, they were offside a few times. The VAR thing happened. And yeah, it was just kind of a boring game. But I was shocked that it finished 0-0. I thought at least Man City would get one or maybe even more, but at least one. But yeah, overall very shocking. So nothing more to really talk about for that game. So we can transition our way to France. I know we typically don't do this on the pod just because, you know, the French league, there's not really much to write home about from that league. But we kind of want to take the time here to just talk about, for me, it's more frustration. And I know I'm salty. People are going to say, yeah, he's salty because, you know, Messi's playing with PSG and not Barca now. Oh, fine. Yeah, maybe I am. Maybe I'm a little salty that PSG took Messi from us, but whatever. But either way, what makes me upset is PSG have been getting these very narrow victories. I'm not going to dive into every game, but 2-1 against Lyon, 2-1 against Metz, or however you pronounce it, which Metz are a team that literally dead last in the French league. And they barely squeezed by them from a last-minute goal from Hakimi. Like these type of wins, I just don't get. I don't know if it's the Pochettino disease. He's just bottling everything, like he bottled everything with Tottenham. I don't know what it is, but I think that I get it. Chemistry takes a while. I get it, but at the same time, like, I mean, come on, you gotta be beating these teams by more. And yeah, they've had chances. Messi hits the woodwork, you know. Goalkeeper saves, Mbappe and Neymar sometimes feel like they're not on the same page, or especially Neymar. I feel like Neymar kind of has this thing where he has a lot of these passes where he passes it and then he thinks the guy's going one way where they're going the other. Again, that's all chemistry. But to be in the French league and to be like barely beating these teams and they're scoring first most of the time too, so PSG is playing from behind. But I just think that in and of itself is telling. Again,
it's embarrassing. We'll
see. Yeah, sorry, exactly.
It's embarrassing.
No, it is. And then in the game against Lyon, this is what had like the internet talking. Essentially, is Pochettino subbing out Messi, and Messi kind of gives him a look like, "Hey, man, do you not know who I am? Like, what are you doing subbing me out? I've never been subbed out. I've been a Barca fan for years, and I can only remember one time Messi was subbed out in a game." And that game wasn't like a done deal, you know, like we still had like some time left in the game. I think it was because he was actually, because he requested to be subbed out because he was feeling he was hurt. That's probably the only time I've seen him actually subbed out of a game. Everyone knows that you don't sub out Messi. And I think Pepper came out and said something along those lines, or he said like something along the lines of, oh, you know, Messi, you shouldn't. Messi never gets subbed out. That's who he is. But yeah, that's just like, that's one of those things. It's just like, damn, like you really want to sub out Messi when you're like, at that point it was a 2-1 game, or I'm sorry, it was a 1-1 game, so like you still have some time unless there was something going on between the two of them. That's why I can't tell if it's Poch or if it's the team chemistry. It's tough to tell. That's why we wanted to talk about it today.
I feel like I agree with your point. I do feel like it was more of a chemistry thing, but I feel like Pochettino subbing out Messi wasn't exactly, it had nothing to do with his form, it had nothing to do with his chemistry. it was kind of a power move. I feel like Pochettino just wanted to show the rest of the squad that yes, we have Lionel Messi on the team. Yes, Lionel Messi is one of the greatest player of all, the greatest players of all time, if not the best player of all time. But he is a player, and I could sub him out, you know, whenever I want to. And yeah, sure, it was 1-1. The game was still very much in doubt for PSG, and him subbing out Messi was definitely it was a hair raiser. Everyone was like, "Wait, like, what are you doing?" You know what I mean? This is not a player that you sub out. But I feel like for him, it kind of felt like a power move to really show the rest of the players, like, yeah, we are one team. There is no one above the rest. You know, even Lionel Messi could have a bad game and get subbed out. You know, no one's safe. And I'm not sure if it worked. I feel like it backfired because, like, everyone was talking about it. Like, no one subs out Lionel Messi. It kind of just, I feel like it kind of backfired on him because it just, you don't, it's indescribable. You do not sub out Lionel Messi. It does not happen. You know, age, injury, you know, fatigue, it does not matter. The only time Lionel Messi should be subbed off is when Lionel Messi requests to be subbed off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's pretty much like I was saying. I mean, it's just absurd. I mean, you can't really sub a player like that off unless he requests. Literally.
Exactly. I mean, when it comes to chemistry, it's just I just find it really embarrassing. You know, PSG has never really had an issue with winning the French League or dominating the French League in the past couple of years. Sure, they didn't win last year, and that's fine. You know, you don't have to win it every year. You got to keep it a little bit competitive. But they look like they're struggling this year. It feels like, you know, if they continue down this path, I don't feel like they're going to win the title this year. And that's embarrassing. That's absurd. You have all these players on your squad. You have I'm not even going to talk about your starting 11. You have a B team, your subs, that would probably contend for the title by themselves. And you can't, you know, pull out these victories. You can't pull out a victory against FC Metz, who are literally dead last in the table. You have problems with Olympique Lyonnais, who are honestly, yes, they are one of the contenders for the League One title. But again, this is PSG. We're talking about the dream team right now. We're talking about a team that is very deep from the keeper all the way to the striker, with at least a fantastic, very, very decent player waiting in the wings if that player is injured. Like, they're at least two deep at every single position. And you can't pull out these wins? It's crazy. I'm not sure, like, what it's going to take to change it. I feel like, obviously, when it comes to most sports, when something isn't working out for your team, the first person to usually go is the manager. And I feel like Pochettino is definitely going to be on his way out if their form continues like this. And it's going to be sad to see. Yes, he's not the greatest manager in the world. Yes, he bottles a lot. But is he the sole reason that PSG is struggling right now? I don't think so. I feel like it's just a matter of them finding the chemistry, them figuring out a way to incorporate everyone into that system. But I feel like I said, if they continue down this path, if they continue on this form, Pochettino's going to go. And you never know who's going to be waiting on the wings. Antonio Conte is waiting on the wings. You know, he's waiting for that perfect job opportunity to come up. Zidane's waiting on the wings. You know, you don't know who's going to be coaching this team next, but you can be damn sure that there's going to be at least 2, 3, 4, even 5 managers waiting on the wings, you know, basically drooling over this job opportunity, to the chance to manage this dream team and, you know, carry them to glory in the Champions League and also the domestic league.
Yeah, it's interesting to say the least. I mean, their record is, you know, undefeated, 7 games, but their form is far, far from that. So it's very deceiving when you look at them at the table. You think, oh, this team's having a great run of form. They're doing this, they're doing that. When in reality, they're not. But, you know, speaking of pain, nothing goes with pain like being a Barcelona fan. So you can call us whatever you want. Call us Pain FC. Call us Barcelona. Whatever. I'll take all of it. You know, but I just want to go through the games first, and then I'll start getting more in depth about what's really wrong with this team. So the first game over the weekend. Well, we had a game postponed, so we're playing two games this week. We're recording right now on Thursday, so we play the first game on Monday against Granada, and I mean, right from the get go, they scored. So like it was as if, okay, second minute, that's it, we're down 2-1-0, and from then on it was just frustration. I mean, it was sheer frustration. No one could create, and when we do create, it's like just terrible chances, either people missing sitters. You got Memphis Depay is regressing. I'll talk more about that. He's not looking as confident as he did in the beginning. And then you have our defense, obviously, that's giving up a lot of easy chances. I don't know what they're doing. And then you have, most importantly, I feel like there's a disconnect in the team. The team just feels like no one really cares anymore. And then I think that comes from the top. I think that comes from the coach as well. So I'll talk about that later, though. But this game against Granada, we did have some chances. Most of them were from Ronald Araujo, who's a center back. And he actually ended up scoring the goal in the 90th minute off a nice cross from Pablo Gavi, who has been seeing a lot more minutes now off of pressure from Laporta to play younger players after Coleman pretty much didn't really want to. But essentially, Laporta said, you got to play these players or else you're going to essentially lose your job because I'm the boss here and this is how things work. This is how things work at Barcelona. So Araujo scored and saved our asses that game on Monday. And then we transition to the game today on Thursday. I just ended a couple hours before we aired. And I mean, this first half had absolutely nothing to speak about. I mean, just absolutely nothing. It was so boring. There was no chances for either team. It just didn't look good. It was just very, very sloppy football all around from us and from Cadiz. And just bad. But the lineup was good. I liked it. I liked the lineup, except for the part where Luke De Jong, so him even on a team is not something that interests me at all.
That nepotism is crazy.
Yeah, he's brought on to be a finisher, a striker, even though he missed a few sitters already. He's only played in like two, three games with us. He's missed sitters already. He's missed a lot of easy goals. He hasn't been contributing much. He's attempted 80 Barcelona as a team. We attempted 80 plus crosses in open play over the last two games. And Luke De Jong connected with zero of them. Nothing. He couldn't
that
find
it. Just a crazy stat in itself.
You had 80 plus chances to try to connect with
80
a cross.
Crosses.
And
80
you
crosses. Over 180 minutes.
Yeah, and you can't connect with zero of them, and you're supposedly supposed to be a finisher. Yeah, I don't know about that. But anyway, this game kind of picked up in the second half, really. And by picked up, I mean probably around like the last 10 minutes were probably like the best part of this game, honestly. The lineups were okay. I like defense. We do have a lot of players out, though. I will say that. But we have Dest, right back. I'm fine with that. Araujo, center back. PK, center back. I'm fine with that. Mingueza, left back. He's usually center back. He doesn't really play left back. We don't really have a traditional like left back except for Jordi Alba, but he's hurt right now.
Yeah.
So Mingueza coming from center back to play left. De Jong, Busquets, Gavi. I like the fact that Gavi started. It was his first official start. This kid is, I was talking about him in the past couple episodes. He's a wonder kid from Barca B. Or no, I'm sorry. He didn't even play for Barca B. He went from
La Masia straight to the senior team.
Yeah, straight to the senior team. So he's someone that's going to be good for us. Yusuf Demir, they call him the Albanian Messi, or the Austrian Messi. I'm sorry. He's supposed to be very good too. I like him. I like that he's playing. But Memphis Depay missed another sitter today, and I think around like very late in the 89th minute, he could have iced the game, could have got us a well-needed 3 points, and he missed it. Like that first one that he missed, though, looked like he didn't even know how to shoot a ball. Like his foot got like tangled under the ball. It was just a terrible, terrible shot, and he was him and the goalie one-on-one after a nice pass. into the box. And then the second one he missed, again, he just missed it. He barely missed this one. It was a little closer, but still, nothing really there. He just doesn't look as confident as he did in the beginning. Frankie de Jong did get sent off, but he kind of deserved that. He made two pretty dumb challenges in a span of 4 minutes. I mean, that's inexcusable. You can't really do that. But what gets me is he brings on people like Sergio Roberto, and he plays them in attacking roles, and I just don't get why he likes to see Sergio Roberto in such an attacking role. But I really don't understand it. And Philip Coutinho, I feel like he should be starting. I don't know. I'm just a fan, but I think he should definitely be starting. But I don't know why he doesn't start him. But anyway, just to top it off, I'm just gonna give you a couple other stats here. We haven't won a single match in September yet. We lost 3-0 to Bayern. We tied 1-1 with Granada, and then 0-0 with Cadiz.
Don't forget that these three games, ever since Koeman made his comments to a Dutch journalist saying because of him, this club now has a future, Barcelona has not won one game since. So,
yeah,
you know, life comes at you fast.
It definitely does, and it came at this guy pretty quick. And he has a 60% win rate as a Barca manager, which is the lowest since Frank Rijkaard in 2008. So Jeez. This guy, we've had some pretty questionable managers, but this guy, I get it. He's the only one since 2008 to probably not have Messi, which is understandable. But still, I mean, the decisions he's been making are just absurd.
So
and then you have people like Sergio Roberto saying we're lacking some luck. I don't think it's luck that we're lacking. I think we're lacking a decent coach and decent players. And then he'll say stuff like, oh, these other teams that beat us don't have better players than us. Well, I mean, they kind of do. Like, I mean, I get it. Cadiz isn't the greatest team in the world, but they have some players that are decent. It's just our players are good, but they're underperforming so bad that who cares how good you are? If you're going to underperform like that, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. Just to give my two cents on the thing. Yeah, I do not understand what the change of tactics was. You know, prior to these two games, Barcelona was kind of just going mostly with a tiki-taka, kind of going a tactic, you know, trying to pass their way into the box, you know, trying to find the open man, trying to, you know, like the kind of tactics that we're used to seeing from this club. But just the increase in crosses was just so crazy to me. And it's not even just that. You mentioned that Sergio Roberto was, you know, basically pushed or forced into a more attacking role during this previous game against Cadiz. The game before that against Granada, you saw PK basically playing a striker. That was, I honestly could not believe my eyes. I honestly could not. I only watched a few minutes of that game, I'm not gonna lie to you. But I did see, you know, PK basically just going up front, you know, trying to get the ball, trying to, you know, either, you know, shoot it in, cross it in, head it in, whatever it is. It's just not something that you're used to seeing. And it was tragic because PK, yes, he's always going to have a spot at Barca. He is a club legend. And anyone who disagrees with that clearly does not watch football enough. But his current form is not great. His defending the past 2 years have been absolutely awful. The only reason he's staying in the starting 11 is because of his name, literally because of his legacy at the club. But if we're going to talk about form, there is no form. He's been awful game in, game out, regardless of what the tournament is, the Copa del Rey, the La Liga, the Champions League, whatever it is, you'll always find a PK mistake. And it's crazy to see. And Koeman taking him from the spot that he's struggling in at center back and thrusting him into a role that he's basically never played in his life, that's absurd. That's stupid. I'm sorry to say it's stupid. I am not a coach. I know nothing about coaching when it comes to football, but like Koeman is literally, I feel like he's literally just trying anything that he could because I feel like it's not even a matter of if anymore. I feel like just a matter of when. I don't believe that Koeman has another month in him as the Barcelona coach. I even told you before we started airing this episode, I feel like I wanted him to get fired tonight so we could have something to talk about. At least we could talk about who the next Barca coach could be. But I don't know why he's still there, because I'm telling you, when it comes to tactics, a dramatic change in tactics, players being put in roles that they're not used to, you know, players that should be starting, not starting. I do not understand why Coutinho is in Koeman's doghouse. I don't get it. I know last season the situation was if he played more than 7 games, he was supposed to be paid a certain amount. And Barcelona obviously going through a rebuilding phase where, you know, the money is not always readily available like it used to be. I get that, but that was last season. This season, Coutinho is still there. There is no clause in this contract that's going to make you give him extra money for whatever. The fact that he's not playing is, or at least he's not starting, is crazy, because, like, if you look at the personnel on the current Barcelona squad, Coutinho is better than at least 80% of them. I know Coutinho is better than Luke de Jong, and I know he's not a striker, but he might as well be, because if you have Coutinho on the bench and your other options are Gerard Pique and Luke de Jong, it's a no-brainer for me. So I don't get it.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny because Koeman, he saw that he had Luke de Jong. He's like, oh, man, I might as well throw Pique out there. It doesn't even matter at this point. I have Luke de Jong as my striker.
Like, bro, he's literally just plugging anyone in there.
Yeah, it's just incredibly sad.
It is, and I hate to see it because I know you're such a massive fan, and I cannot imagine what you're going through at the moment. Like, it's crazy to think about. The only thing I could tell you is, you know, like, chin up, because this isn't going to last forever. Koeman is not going to be the coach. I guarantee you, look, right now for me, it is September 24th. It is the morning of Friday. It is 5 a.m. by me. I am guaranteeing it. By October 24th, Koeman will not be the Barcelona manager. I can guarantee that.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe bet.
That's the bright side of this whole fiasco. To me, at least.
Yeah, I guess so, man. I mean, I know it's not going to last forever, but at this moment in time, it's literally sucking the life out of me. And seeing like our rivals, Real Madrid, do so well, and they honestly deserve it. I can't even hate on them or say anything. They've been coming back. They've been fighting adversity. Karim Benzema has just been absolutely on a tear. 8 goals and 7 assists in 6 games. Like, this guy's on fire. And Vinicius Jr. is also on absolute fire. So I can't even hate on them. They got the best team right now. It's their league to lose. Honestly, Atletico Madrid could give them a run for their money, but they're going through a tough patch right now as well. But I still think that Real Madrid is the team to be in Spain right now. And I feel like they can actually shock some people in the Champions League if they keep this run of form. So I can't even say anything bad about him right now, which is making me even saltier. So
no, just the fact that I remember seeing this stat today and honestly could not believe it. Do you know that Karim Benzema has 8 goals, which is as much like Barcelona as a team also have 8 goals?
Yeah, I did see that stat now that you said.
It's not even just that. Like, I respect the hell out of Karim Benzema, but, like, Barcelona is known to be one of the more elite attacking teams in the world. You know, you always see them racking up the goals. You know, they might not win the La Liga every year, but if you look at the goal difference, it's usually insane. It's usually more than what the actual league winners have as the goal difference if Barcelona don't win the league title. And to see that one player has as much goals as Barcelona, it is just a crazy stat in itself. And it just makes you respect Karim Benzema as much as you can, because he's just a great player. Like, we talked about this before. He doesn't have, like, a dangerous first step. He doesn't have, like, an elite first step. He doesn't have, like, the physicality of someone like Lukaku does. He doesn't have the speed that, you know, maybe Mo Salah does. But, again, he just always finds a way to get in there. And you see that game in and game out. He always finds these positions. His positioning is very, very good. And his shooting is okay. Like, it's the craziest thing about Benzema to me is that, you know, you analyze his game from literally any point. Is he world class at something? No. Does he always...
There is one thing.
What?
The only thing he's world class at is he knows where the goal is. He has a knack for finding that goal. Like him and Suarez, they kind of have that same thing where they know where the goal is at all times. Like he can be looking down, running with his head down on the ground, and he'll still somehow kick it into the goal. And he's done it before, and so has Suarez. So that's one thing that him and Suarez are both like world class at. They know where that goal is. They're true strikers. Like you said, they don't have the skill moves. They don't have the physicality like someone like Romelu Lukaku does. But that knack for goal, man, that does it all for him. I mean, he's on fire.
I feel like maybe maybe right now it's true, but generally known, Benzema, like, he's just... Do you remember when Ronaldo was back with Real Madrid? And I feel like he always set up these perfect chances for Benzema, and Benzema always just, like, you know, missed them or, you know, just couldn't hit them on target. Yeah, so I feel like, you know... Always. At that moment, maybe Benzema didn't really have a knack for finding out where the goal was. Maybe now he does, now that he's more independent, now that he's basically carried the team on his back.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, obviously, just generally speaking, he doesn't have, like, a world-class ability, you know, for finding the goal. And not for anything else. And I'm not disrespecting him. I'm just saying the fact that he doesn't exactly have, like, world-class skills... And for him to be in the form that he's in now is just very impressive. And it's not even just Benzema. And it's Real Madrid as a whole. I feel like they're playing much more as a team this year compared to other years. I feel like they figured out, you know, what they're trying to do. I feel like the philosophy that Carlo Ancelotti is investing into this team is working well so far. And I say so far is because I know Ancelotti... He coached Bayern for a few years, and he coached Everton for a few years. And I obviously follow both the Premier League and Bayern Munich. And Ancelotti's philosophy with football is basically just attack, attack, attack. Don't worry about the defense. Who cares if we concede two if we can score four? That's basically the point that he's trying to make. And you can see that. You know, you look at Real Madrid, they have a lot of goals this season. But again, they've also conceded a lot of easy goals this season as well. But it doesn't matter. Because they always find a way to win. And they always... And the team, like I've said before, they're gelling very, very well right now. Even their newest signing, Camavinga, he's playing like he's very... Like he's been there for a few years now. He's been doing very, very well. And I know the kid's always had potential. But seeing him in the form that he's in right now is very impressive. Considering he's a newcomer to the team. Even players such as Vinicius Jr., he's doing very well for the team as well. Rodrigo, Asensio just scored a hat trick his last game against his old team. You know, mm-hmm. You don't see that very often. So Madrid as a whole, and I hate that I'm complimenting them because I genuinely hate this team. And I say hate, I'm not even going to say, like, you know, hate is a strong word. I genuinely do hate this team. But I'm not going to deny the greatness that they're in now. And even what's even more scary is that, you know, they have Hazard basically on the bench almost every game now because, you know, he's injured most of the time. You have Modric and Cruz who are obviously getting up there in age, but, you know, they just, as a team, they don't seem to be slowing down, which is very impressive for them.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Everything they're doing is impressive. Like I said earlier, I can't hate on anything they're doing. It's admirable. I mean, there are rivals and everything, but you got to give credit where credit's due. And absolutely. They're definitely killing it right now. So props to them, man. But hopefully we can get there one day. Hopefully.
I mean, you'd love to see it only because, you know, you love seeing competition. Even as a neutral fight, you do like seeing competition. You know, seeing a one-horse race is never always fun for players or, I mean, for fans that follow a specific league. But no, I think that covers everything this week. I think we did a pretty good job on, you know, touching upon like a bunch of subjects and things like that. And I feel like we got everything that we needed to. Is there anything that you want to, you know, talk about? Maybe future games, something you're looking forward to next couple of weeks when it comes to these games?
So just really one thing. I know there's a few big games happening this weekend in the Premier League, and other than the Premier League as well, in the Spanish League, just because everything's week, you know, what is it, week five, week six, right?
I believe
Or
it makes week six in the Premier League, yeah.
yeah, so I mean it's getting down to it. I mean, I'm looking really forward looking really looking forward to Chelsea and Man City. That's gonna be a good game, but that's on the 25th, so that's what, Saturday? Yeah, that's Saturday.
It is Saturday.
That's gonna be a good game. That's actually one of the games that I'm really looking forward to this weekend. And as far as Barca goes, I mean, I don't know if looking forward to is even like a good word to use, because I'm just expecting just disappointment. But we do take on Levante, who are not an easy opponent to look over. So, and even if they were, we have trouble with easy opponents anyway. So, and then after that, we have Benfica in the Champions League on Wednesday. So it could be a disappointing week. It could be another disappointing week for us, and I'm not very optimistic.
But hey, I mean, every day that passes is basically every another day closer to Koeman getting fired. So, glass half full
This
mentality, I guess.
is true. This is true. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm pretty sure that's it for me as well. The Manchester City and Chelsea game is going to be very, very nice. For those of you that play fantasy, remember that because this is a very early game, the deadline is going to be also very early. I believe it is going to the deadline for you in your time zone is going to be at 5 a.m. So before you head to sleep, you got to have your team set in, basically.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot of options this week when it comes to fantasy. I'm still very. I don't know who I'm going to captain. I know that we haven't talked about fantasy in a few weeks, but I really don't know who I'm going to captain. I am terrified. I want to pick Ronaldo, and he's facing Aston Villa, and they're not the team that they used to be. But Ronaldo's 36, and he's getting up there in age, and there's a lot of players on that squad that could also shine. But I also don't want to pick Mo Salah because Mo Salah, I feel like he's hit and miss. He's either doing very well, good game, and then the next couple games he just doesn't do that well. I don't know what to do. If I had Lukaku, I'm pretty sure I would have captained Lukaku because I feel like he's just very consistent since he's been back at Chelsea. I'm not gonna delve into it too much, but yeah, no,
Yeah.
a lot of contemplating of the next, day or so on who I'm gonna captain. All right, well, that's going to end it off for us. Just going to do a little quick media plug. You can always find us on Instagram at the Deep End PODC. That is the Deep End Pod C. And you can find us on Twitter at the Deep End PD. That is the Deep End PD. We're always looking forward to you guys, reaching out to us, seeing if you guys want us to talk about something specific. You guys want to ask us any questions. Or, just basically show your support. We appreciate anyone that, that supports this podcast. Is there any last comments you want to make, Mo?
No, if you guys do see something that maybe, I know it's still early days in this podcast, episode six this is going to be. So if you guys have anything you want us to improve or any suggestions, hit us in the DMs, any questions. We will do a Q&A very soon. That way you guys can kind of give us some feedback of what you might want to hear. But no, other than that, that does it for us. And thank you guys for listening, and see you next week then.